In July 2002, 15-year-old Omar Khadr was picked up by U.S. forces in Afghanistan and accused of killing an American soldier with a hand grenade. Although he's a Canadian citizen, Khadr remains in the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay as the result of a plea deal. We are joined now by filmmakers Luc Côté and Patricio Enriquez. Their documentary, You Don't Like the Truth, 4 days Inside Guantanamo, uses excerpts from Khadr's 2003 videotaped interrogations by Canadian intelligence officers. The film, a stunning and eye-opening look inside Guantanamo, is currently playing at Film Forum on West Houston Street, and will be there through October 4th. And they're very pleased to welcome Luke and Patricio to our show today for a backstory segment. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
How did Omar Khadr wind up in Afghanistan? He's a Canadian, isn't he?
Yeah, he was born in Toronto, and his father was from Pakistan, and his mother from Palestine. But he was born in Toronto.
Wasn't his father somehow connected to Al Qaeda?
It was never proven, but that's what the intelligence says, that he was a bit connected with Al Qaeda, that he was traveling back and forth between Afghanistan and Canada and Pakistan. He set up some orphanages in Pakistan and Afghanistan during the war. So, and maybe some people say it was his cover to raise money also for Al Qaeda. But he was traveling with his entire family, so with his kids. And that's how Omar ended up in Afghanistan. He's been in Afghanistan for some time. But then when he was caught by the American army, he was 15 years old. And he was put in a house by his father to serve as an interpreter. And so that's how he ended up, you know, in Bagram in Guantanamo after that.
Well, are there any questions about whether he could have actually committed the crimes that he was charged with?
Well, we really don't know. We have made a film with the material that we can get. And is it not clear if he threw a grenade that killed Sergeant Christopher Spear in 2002? Because simply Omar was never presented before to have a fair trial anywhere. You know, the commission in Guantanamo is everything but not a fair trial.
Well, there is some photographic evidence which puts it into question.
It certainly does, but at the same time, like Patricio just said, since he never had a trial, it's very difficult to see what were the proofs that the Pentagon had that he had threw this grenade, because that was the main accusation, but we never saw any proof of it. And the photos that you see in the film, it was taken right after the battle, and it was a huge battle. And you see that he has two huge holes, you know, that you can enter like a can of beer in those holes. So, and he was face down.
In his body.
In his body, exactly. And he was face down on the ground. And they say that he rose from there and he threw a grenade at that moment. And so a lot of people are questioning this, because how is it possible? And but again, we will never know.
Well, under any circumstances, wouldn't he technically be classified as a child soldier?
Yes, he should be. You know, he should be, because he was 15 years old. The legislation, international and domestic laws in Canada and United States, should put him as a child soldier and it to be treated like that.
And isn't he one of the few child soldiers ever to be charged with a war crime? There are child soldiers in Asia and Africa who have killed many, many people. Have they ever been prosecuted?
No. Prosecuted, yes. Treated like children, yes. But Omar is actually the first child soldier convicted for war crimes since Nuremberg.
Now, before he was sent to Guantanamo, he was held at Bagram.
Yeah.
Seriously injured, you say. Was he given proper medical care?
Well, the story that we hear is when he came back from the battlefield, he was taken on a stretcher by helicopter, and he went to Bagram. He was unconscious for like more than a week. And after he woke up, he was in a hospital there in Bagram. And they say, and other cellmates that we interviewed that were further released later on, they say that he came, when he arrived in Bagram, you know, the rumor said that he had killed an American soldier. So everybody on the base just hated him. And even though he was 15 years old, he was treated in the most terrible ways compared to a lot of other prisoners in Bagram. So which meant that a lot of the time they describe that purposely when they would take him up, they would take it by his injury so that he could, you know, he could be hurt. And it's also the time when he was questioned by this interrogator for more than 49 times, you know, during which he said he was tortured badly too.
And you spoke to one of the interrogators who said that he felt kind of guilty now, but at the time he was so filled with anger that he wanted to hurt this kid.
Well, it's a specialist, Damien Corsetti, that was in Bagram in Abu Ghraib. And you're right. Today, for us, Mr. Corsetti is another victim of that war because he was 21 years old. He was sent to Afghanistan, and he told us that he hated everything that appears to be Muslim. So this person today is really affected by what he did, and he cannot. He has nightmares. He cannot sleep. He's hearing, you know, people yelling and shouting for that.
My guests are Patricio Enriquez and Luc Côté. Their film, You Don't Like the Truth, 4 Days Inside Guantanamo, is currently being shown at the Film Forum on West Houston Street. It runs through October 4th. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. He was 16 at the time of the videotaped interrogations by Canadian intelligence officers, which are the basis of your film. Would it have been possible to get footage of his interrogation by American intelligence?
No, really.
We don't think so.
Yeah, because this is classified information. We know one thing.
But how did you gain access to this? Some of this is very embarrassing for the Canadian intelligence officers.
It is. You see, the only reason why we got access to this, it's because there was the Canadian intelligence who went to Guantanamo under the supervision of the CIA, and they did this interrogation for 4 days. Then they came back to Canada, and they wanted to be able to do a transcript of all of this. So they got permission from the CIA to bring back the tapes. Omar Khadr's lawyer, a Canadian, knew of the existence of this tape. He knew also of thousands and thousands of pages of documents that he never had access. As the defense lawyer, you know, you're supposed to have access to the material so that you can prepare a defense. So he went to the Canadian court to get access to this, and it took him 5 years up to the Supreme Court of Canada to have these tapes released. And finally, in July 2008, the Supreme Court said, yes, you should release this, and everybody should have access to it. And that's how we got access to these 7-hour interrogations in Guantanamo, which meant that, you know, here in the United States, it would have been impossible because, you know, it's totally outlaw. And still to this day, this is the only images that we have from inside Guantanamo. It doesn't exist anything else.
At first, Omar seems excited to see these Canadian intelligence officers. He thought that they had come as representatives of the Canadian government to help him get released.
Well, you know, this was what's interesting for us is the dramatic structure of this interrogation. The first day, they present to Omar, he's there, as people coming from Canada. And Omar believes really that they want to help him to go out from Guantanamo. The second day, the third day is terrible because he understands that he's not that. And he's under pressure, psychological abuse and pressure, so he cracked down.
Well, the Canadians were acting as surrogates for American intelligence, weren't they?
Absolutely. And in the room, there were two Canadian officers and there was a woman from the CIA being there also to monitor the Canadians so that they would know exactly what was going on. And they were really going there to get more information.
And to soften him up, they bring him cartons of fast food.
That's right.
Yeah. Every day they would offer him Big Mac and Subways and Coca-Cola and they thought it would work. And
So that means that they knew that they were treating a child, you know, well, because they were offering him things that a child can't appreciate. They were not offering him a cigarette or a coffee, but Coca-Cola and Subways.
At several points on the tape, Omar says he's being tortured by the Americans, and the agents respond by either dismissing what he's saying or making jokes about the sandwich that they brought him. Did their reaction surprise you?
It was shocking, I have to say. You know, because, you know, we as documentary filmmakers, we know, and as you, sir, when you conduct an interview with someone, if you want that person to reveal itself, you know, you have to have empathy with the person so that you understand that you, at least you pretend that you understand what they're telling you and that you try to understand. But they're there to get information, intelligence from this kid, and the way they treat him with no respect, you know, and forcing him, it's not with the food that they bought him. And so for us, you know, they're doing a terrible job.
Well, it seems at first by bringing him that food and by talking to him in a friendly way that they're trying to develop some kind of empathy, but very quickly that changes and they just start pressuring him, and it was kind of very heavy-handed. What did the psychologist you spoke with for this film tell you about how interrogators can get people to open up to them?
Well, you know, the psychologists, of course, you know, they don't understand the techniques that these guys use in this specific interrogation, because everybody thinks they were really amateur, because this is certainly the way to conduct an interrogation, not if you want to have more intelligence. And they did exactly the opposite. You know, they deny, even when he was complaining about his injuries, they deny, come on, what are you complaining about? You know, he says, I don't see from one eye. No, I see you. You see from one eye. I'm hurting my feet. Yeah, but your feet is still at the bottom of your leg. And what's wrong with you? You know, being the sarcasm of it, how can it work if you try to get more intelligence?
There's another side to this, just the visual aspect. The video looks disturbing as well. There are three cameras on Omar Khadr during the interrogation. His face is obscured by bars. The footage is extremely, extremely grainy, but it's very powerful.
Well, that was a challenge for us, because when we discovered this material, we got, as filmmakers, the impression that the Supreme Court was making a gift to us. You know, this image comes from the dark side. We know, as filmmakers, that a big part of reality, if not the most part of reality, is invisible for cameras. So for once, we got this material coming from inside Guantanamo. And we thought that our challenge was to transform that on a cinematographic proposal. If we reached that or not, it's not up to us to say. But what we found, just listening to that, it was this dialogue between a Canadian team of a secret police and just a kid. And this is fascinating, really, because it's everybody's seeking for some kind of truth. And which truth for what? That is fascinating for us.
Well, we watch him get learier and learier about the proceedings. Did he have access to a lawyer at this point?
Not at this point, not in February 2003. So there was no lawyer present in the room. And of course, later on, the Supreme Court of Canada declared that this was illegal for the Canadian service to go there and to do the interrogation. That was totally illegal. And the government was supposed to compensate for something, and they never did. You know, with the
did they try to pressure the United States into releasing him to the Canadian authorities?
No. They even denied to be working with Americans. In a moment, there has been negotiations to see what they can do with Omar Khadr. And the American government was making some pressure on the Canadian government. And the Canadian government was lying to the parliament, to the public opinion, saying, no, there is no negotiation. We know now that there have been negotiations. And it's clear that for the Americans, maybe this was a big problem to having this child in Guantanamo.
How long had he been in custody before he was actually charged with a crime?
Oh, it's been years in custody in Guantanamo. Mm. And before he had some kind of trial. It was not even a trial. Like we said, that was last year, exactly a year ago in October.
He had a plea deal.
He had a plea deal.
8 years.
Yeah.
No, that's 8 years, not time served. That's 8 years on top of the 7 years he'd had been in. Is it 7 years?
More than 7 years. He was. He's been in Guantanamo since January 2003, and he was arrested in September 2002. Yeah,
he's 25 now. Why would his lawyers accept an agreement like that?
That was the only possibility to avoid him a sentence for 40 years. So just made in a plea guilty, they got 8 years for him instead of 40.
But what we have to understand also is right from the beginning of the trial, his lawyer tried to get the military judge to throw away everything that he said under torture. Because under torture, anybody would say, you know, have we confessed anything? And that's what happened with Omar Khadr. And the judge decided at the beginning of the trial that, no, he would keep everything that he said under torture. That would be
acceptable,
part of the trial.
Yeah.
Acceptable. So at that moment, his lawyers knew that the game was over. He would get, like, life imprisonment. That's why they did a deal.
You spoke to a number of former Canadian government officials, including Bill Graham, who was the country's foreign minister from 2002 to 2004. How do they explain the way they dealt with all of this?
I think Bill Graham had a lot of problem to explain it, really. And, you know, as at that time, the liberal, he played a bit being naive and innocent at that point, that he didn't really know, that they tried to have consular affairs, you know, visit. But then, you know, at that time, Colin Powell decided, no, you cannot go. This is Guantanamo. This is our own thing. So at the beginning, the liberals, they were really, you know, also like letting Omar Khadr be in Guantanamo and not doing anything.
And now there's a conservative government. Have they changed the policy at all?
No, in fact, it's even worse.
But at least we got former foreign minister of foreign affairs in Canada, Mr. Graham. We tried to get an interview with Mr. Powell, and he refused, saying that he didn't remember about that.
On his first day in office, President Obama pledged to close Guantanamo. In your estimation, has the Obama administration approach to the prison been all that different from what we saw with the Bush administration?
Certainly not. And I guess the big disappointment also, that even though they didn't close Guantanamo, is the fact that he also gave legitimacy to the military commission. We thought with Obama, at least the military commission would be gone. No, now it's still happening, and that's kind of sad, you know.
Do you think that the Obama administration pushed for a plea deal to avoid having a military commission deal with a minor?
I don't know. Don't know.
Nobody's really
talking about
that. But excuse me, this his story, Omar Khadr's story, is not widely known in the United States. Is this a big story in Canada?
It was for a moment. Yeah. Not now, I think. But, you know, in Canada, we have a 50-50 situation. 50% of the population thinks that Omar was a terrible terrorist, and the other part is trying to understand him. You know, so it's not clear what is going to happen. And he's supposed to be back next month in October to Canada. And we suspect that the conservative government is preparing some kind of a bad welcome to him, you know, saying a terrorist is coming back to the country. So it's not going to be easy for him.
Luc Côté and Patricio Enriquez's documentary film is called You Don't Like the Truth, 4 Days Inside Guantanamo. It's currently playing at the Film Forum on West Houston Street and will run through October 4th. And they will be doing Q&As tonight and tomorrow at the 8:10 shows at the Film Forum. And they will be tonight. They will be joined by one of the psychiatrists who they have talked to in the film. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, sir.